Before this world came into existence, there was in its place a confused mass of shapeless elements called chaos. These elements, becoming at length consolidated, resolved themselves into two widely different substances, the lighter portion of which, soaring on high, formed the sky, or firmament, and constituted itself into a vast, overarching vault, which protected the firm and solid mass beneath. Thus came into being the two first great primeval deities of the Greeks, Uranus and Gaia. Uranus, the more refined deity, represented the light and air of heaven, possessing the distinguishing qualities of light, heat, purity, and omnipresence, whilst Gaia, the firm, flat, life-sustaining earth, was worshipped as the great, all-nourishing mother. Her many titles refer to her more or less in this character, and she appears to have been universally revered among the Greeks, there being scarcely a city in Greece which did not contain a temple erected in her honor. Indeed, Gaia was held in such veneration that her name was always invoked whenever the gods took a solemn oath, made an emphatic declaration, or implored assistance. Uranus, the heaven, was believed to have united himself in marriage with Gaia, the earth, and a moment of reflection will show what a truly poetical and also what a logical idea this was. For, taken in a figurative sense, this union actually does exist. The smiles of heaven produce the flowers of earth, whereas his long-continued frowns exercise so depressing an influence upon his loving partner that she no longer decks herself in bright and festive robes, but responds with ready sympathy to his melancholy mood. The firstborn child of Uranus and Gaia was Oceanus, the ocean stream, that vast expanse of ever-flowing water which encircled the earth. Here we meet with another logical, though fanciful, conclusion, which a very slight knowledge of the workings of nature proves to have been just and true. The ocean is formed from the rains which descend from heaven and streams which flow from earth. By making Oceanus therefore the offspring of Uranus and Gaia, the ancients, if we take this notion in its literal sense, merely assert that the ocean is produced by the combined influence of heaven and earth, whilst at the same time, their fervid and poetical imagination led them to see in this, as in all manifestations of the powers of nature, an actual, tangible divinity. But Uranus, the heaven, the embodiment of light, heat, and the breath of life, also produced offspring who were of a much less material nature than his son Oceanus. These other children of his were supposed to occupy the intermediate space which divided him from Gaia, nearest to Uranus, and just beneath him came Aether, a bright creation representing that highly rarefied atmosphere which immortals alone could breathe. Then followed Air, which was in close proximity to Gaia and represented, as its name implies, the grosser atmosphere surrounding the earth which mortals could freely breathe and without which they would perish. Aether and air were separated from each other by divinities called Nephele. And these were their restless and wandering sisters, who existed in the form of clouds, ever floating between aether and air. Well, Gaia also produced the mountains and Pontus the sea. She united herself with the latter, and their offspring were the sea deities Nereus, Thaumas, Phorcys, Ceto, and Eurybia. Coexistent with Uranus and Gaia were two mighty powers who were also the offspring of chaos. And these were Erebus, or darkness, and Nyx, night, who formed a striking contrast to the cheerful light of heaven and the bright smiles of earth. Erebus reigned in that mysterious world below, where no ray of sunshine, no gleam of daylight, nor vestige of health-giving terrestrial life ever appeared. And Nyx, the sister of Erebus, represented night and was worshipped by the ancients with the greatest solemnity. Uranus was also supposed to have been united to Nyx, but only in his capacity as god of light, he being considered the source and fountain of all light. And their children were Eos, or Aurora, the dawn, and Hemera, the daylight. Nyx, again, on her side, was also doubly united, having been married at some indefinite period to Erebus. In addition to those children of heaven and earth already enumerated, Uranus and Gaia produced two distinctly different races of beings called giants and titans. The giants personified brute strength alone, but the titans united to their great physical power intellectual qualifications variously developed. And there were three giants, Briareus, Cottus, and Gyges, who each possessed 100 hands and 50 heads, and were known collectively by the name of the Hecatoncheires, which signified 100-handed. These mighty giants could shake the universe and produce earthquakes. It is therefore evident that they represented active subterranean forces. And the Titans were 12 in number. Their names were Oceanus, Ceos, Cryos, Hyperion, Iapetus, Cronus, Theia, Rhea, Themis, Mnemosyne, Phoebe, and Tethys. Now, Uranus, the chaste light of heaven, the essence of all that is bright and pleasing, held in abhorrence his crude, rough, and turbulent offspring, the giants, and moreover, feared that their great power might eventually prove hurtful to himself. Well, he therefore hurled them into Tartarus, that portion of the lower world which served as the subterranean dungeon of the gods. In order to avenge the oppression of her children, the giants, Gaia instigated a conspiracy on the part of the Titans against Uranus, which was carried to a successful issue by her son, Cronus. He wounded his father, and from the blood of the wound which fell upon the earth sprang a race of monstrous beings, also called giants. Assisted by his brother Titans, Cronus succeeded in dethroning his father, who, enraged at his defeat, cursed his rebellious son and foretold to him a similar fate. Well, Cronus now became invested with supreme power and assigned to his brother's offices of distinction, subordinate only to himself. Subsequently, however, when secure of his position, he no longer needed their assistance. He basely repaid their former services with treachery and made war upon his brothers and faithful allies and, assisted by the giants, completely defeated them, sending such as resisted his all-conquering arm down into the lowest depths of Tartarus.